Chapter 5. I spent the month following my return in bed, suffering from an infection I had probably picked up on the site, and which assumed the form of violent bouts of fever similar to malaria. I was not in pain, but my brain was on fire, and I could not stop turning over in my head the elements of the fearful truth that I had glimpsed. There was no more doubt in my mind that a human era had preceded the simian age on the planet Soror, and this conviction gave me a sort of intoxication. On second thoughts, however, I'm not sure if I ought to feel proud of this discovery or profoundly humiliated by it. My self-respect notes with satisfaction that monkeys have invented nothing, that they are mere imitators. My humiliation derives from the fact that a human civilization could have been so easily assimilated by monkeys. How could this have happened? In my delirium, I could not keep my mind off the problem. True, we civilized folk have known for a long time that we are mortal, but such a complete disappearance makes the senses reel. A sudden disaster? A cataclysm? Or else the slow decline of the one and the progressive ascent of the other? I am inclined to the latter hypothesis, and I find extremely significant indications of this evolution in the monkeys' present-day conditions and preoccupations. This importance they attach to biological research, for instance. Well, I'm fully aware of its origin. In the old days, many monkeys must have served as experimental subjects for men, as is the case in our own laboratories. These were the ones who first hoisted the flag, who were the pioneers of the revolution. They would naturally have begun by imitating the gestures and attitudes observed in their masters, and these masters were researchers, learned biologists, doctors, nurses, and warders. Hence this unusual imprint on most of their enterprises, which still persists today. And what about the men all this time? Enough speculation about monkeys. It is now 2 months since I visited my former companions in captivity, my fellow humans. Today I feel better. I have no more fever. Yesterday I told Zira. Zira has looked after me like a sister during my illness. I told her that I was planning to resume my work in her department. She did not seem very pleased, but she raised no objection. It is time for me to pay my visit. Here I am once more in the room with the cages. A strange emotion makes me pause on the threshold. I now see these creatures in a new light. It is with anguish that I wonder, before making up my mind to enter, if they will recognize me after my long absence. Well, they do recognize me. All their eyes are fixed on me, as they always used to be, and even with a sort of deference. Am I dreaming, or do I really discern a new look in them? A look reserved for me, and different from the glances they bestow on their monkey warders. A gleam impossible to describe, but in which I fancy I see an awakened curiosity, an unusual emotion, shades of ancestral memories trying to emerge from bestiality, and perhaps an uncertain glimmer of hope. This hope, I believe, I have myself unconsciously nourished for some time. Is it not the reason why I'm overwhelmed by this feverish exaltation? Am not I, Ulysse Merou, the man whom destiny has brought to this planet to be the instrument of human regeneration? Here, distinctly stated at last, is the hazy notion that has been haunting me for a month. The good Lord does not play dice, as a certain physicist once said. Nothing happens by mere chance in the cosmos. My voyage to the world of Betelgeuse was decreed by a superior consciousness. It is up to me to show myself worthy of the choice and to be the new savior of this human race in decline. As before, I go slowly round the cages. I force myself not to rush over to Nova's cage at once. Is the envoy of destiny entitled to favorites? I speak to each of my subjects. The moment has not yet come for them to talk. I do not mind. I have my entire lifetime to accomplish my mission. I now approach my former cage with studied negligence. I look out of the corner of my eye, but I do not see Nova's arms stretched through the bars. I do not hear the cries of joy with which she always used to greet me. A strange misgiving assails me. I cannot restrain myself. I dash forward. The cage is empty. I summon one of the warders in an authoritative voice which makes the captive shiver. Zanam is the one who appears. He does not like receiving orders from me, but Zira has decreed that he should hold himself at my disposal. "Where is Nova?" He replies he does not know, in a surly manner. "She was taken away one day without any reason being given." I repeat my question, in vain. At this moment, luckily, Zira turns up to carry out her tour of inspection. She sees me in front of the empty cage and realizes why I'm so upset. She looks embarrassed and at once starts talking about something else.
"Cornelius has just come back. He wants to see you."
At the moment, I don't give a damn about Cornelius or the chimpanzees or the gorillas or any other creature in heaven or hell. I point at the cell with my finger. "Where's Nova?"
"She's ill," says the she-monkey. "She's been transferred to a special wing."
She beckons to me and leads me aside, out of earshot of the warder.
"The administrator made me promise to keep it secret, but I feel you ought to know. She's ill, nothing serious, but it's important enough to put the authorities on their toes. Nova is expecting. She's pregnant,"
the she-monkey announces, observing me with a curious expression.